Hello, everyone. Welcome to Everything in Potteration, because sometimes the internet can be too much. I am Robert, and I am 3D maneuvering gear.
Just R. I'm Daily, and did you know that Jaeger means hunter?
Whoa.
I am Colin, and every time I hear Jaeger, I think Jaeger bombs, like Jaegermeister. And I mean, it's every single time I hear Aaron Jaeger, I'm like Jaegermeister. Every time, without fail.
You know, I mean, Jaeger is a Meister hunter, and he's kind of the bomb that explodes in the story.
Because he's a Titan. Spoilers.
Just getting right into it, huh?
Yeah.
So in today's episode of Everything in Potteration, we're going to be talking about Attack on Titan. We're going to have a little bit here at the beginning that is spoiler-free. We just kind of want to go into why we're talking about Attack on Titan, aside from the fact that obviously it's like kind of one of the biggest anime of 2020-2021, because people have alleged that it's fascist, which is a funny word to use. But then we will, of course, let you know when the spoilers will happen. You'll hear the music, we'll tee it up, and the spoilers will go all the way up through the current anime. So season 4, episode 16, part 1. We will not talk about part 2 or the ending of the show yet. That's kind of where we're at. So I wanted to start off this show by going around the room, this big room we're in, and asking you two, what do you think about Attack on Titan as a show? I want to ask Daily first, because I know you watched all of it in the past week, like literally episode 1 to, what is it, 70 or
yeah,
so
in the past week? That was an experience, one that I wish I would have indulged in back when it first came out, but I was like an anime snob at the time, and I thought that the manga was too ugly to read. So while all my friends at the lunch table in high school were reading and being like Levi, I did not read, but I did get a little jealous when like you could casually cosplay as someone from the show pretty easily, just because of like the jacket and the pants and like maybe not like the 3D movering gear, but
the movering gear,
movering gear, 3D movering gear, I was very thoroughly impressed. There were definitely some parts that I was like, this is really convoluted, but there was, for the most part, I'm impressed with the level of storytelling here and how long I waited to see what was in the basement.
Yeah, I would say that you were better off waiting, because that the 4-year gap between season 1 and 2 was like torturous. Ridiculous how long it took for season 2 to come out. And because season 1 is just such like, it's like a taste of what's to come. And then season 2 is basically just a shitload of questions and setting a lot of things up. And then season 3, and then the first half of season 3 is basically more of that until you get to the second half. So,
yeah.
Honestly, it's probably better to binge than it would be just to like watch it as it was coming out, because I fell off after the second season. So,
yeah. I'm in a similar boat as you, because in our pre-show when we were planning this episode, Daily was talking about how, oh, I remember when my high school friend, when I was in high school, back in high school, when my friends dressed up and cosplayed as Attack on Titan people. And I'm like, fuck me. This show has been around since I was in high school.
Yes. That's what I'm saying, dude. They took their sweet time.
Yeah. Coming out and it's still not done. I mean, the manga is done as of this recording, but season 4 part 2 doesn't drop until the end of the year / beginning of 2022, which feels like forever from now, but you know, we've waited this long.
Yeah, right? So what the anime started in 2013? Yeah, and so in 8 years, that means in 8 years they've only came out with 4 seasons, and they haven't released the second half of the 4th season yet. That's crazy. That's which like is, so so
it is
little.
Because and dare I, this might be a hot take, but like I think it's kind of a concise story.
It is,
but now it's been spread out so long that I think when I was going into it, I was like, this is gonna be, I'm gonna need to get a notebook to keep track of all the characters, and this is going to be really complicated. And that might have been the case if I was watching it over an 8-year period, but because I watched it all in one go, it felt very like novel-esque, I guess I'll say.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's really interesting about its story is that, I mean, when it comes to spoilers, it's so easy to spoil things. I mean, Daily already spoiled something in the beginning of this show.
I forget you don't know that off the bat.
Right. But that's the thing, is I find it so tricky to talk about the show because every season, like, it's a new groundbreaking revelation that changes the way you see the show or the manga or however you want to consume it, right? So, I mean, even to say, we could say, like, to describe season 4, episode 1 would be like, what the fuck is happening, right? If you haven't, if you only are familiar with, oh, it's the show where humans get eaten by giants.
It's a different show.
Yeah.
It's like in a different show entirely.
Right. So what you might be asking, right, is if you haven't seen the show, how is Attack on Titan, a show about giants eating humans, fascist? How is it fascist? It's like that Reductress article, like that strawberry dress is fascist, right? It feels like a little bit of a non sequitur, right, in terms of where you think the show is in the beginning. And to explain it without spoiling anything too much, you learn so much about the world in that power dynamics change, where it's not just giants eat humans, but it's humans fighting each other. And at some point, it gets very political. Oh no, politics.
Oh,
what
boy.
What if the real enemy is the people?
The people. And I think it's worth discussing this for us to like dive into this because, you know, I'm a big fan of, we should always read the subtext in any literature, show, movie we watch, right? I mean, sometimes Fast and the Furious is just about dudes in cars. Sometimes that's really all it is. We don't need to dive into the socioeconomic meaning behind taking life a quarter mile at a time, right? Mm. But then you have a very heavily layered show like Attack on Titan that has a lot of allegories that are based in the real world in some way, shape, or form. And then once you have a show that's so, like, wears all of that proudly on its sleeve, I guess pun intended. when it wears it all on its sleeve like that, it behooves the reader or the audience to look into it. But then it kind of brings into question which is the right interpretation, you know?
Yeah. So to clarify with, while still being vague, I guess, it turns into a thing. The show turns into a thing where there's like no good or bad guys. In a sense, mm-hmm. like it's all just people dealing with some politically charged movements and different viewpoints being challenged, whether that's,
yeah.
that's through physical violence or negotiation.
Yeah, I definitely say that there are definitely motivations that we might sympathize with over the course of the narrative. But we're never asked to ignore, like, what the bad things that people might do in order to have a means to an end. Mm-hmm. We're still asked to be critical of people doing shitty things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting about the revelation of the show, because it starts out as, like, this is a shonen anime, like, with a very tragic setup. Right, like people live in this world that's fairly dystopic, and this is stuff that you could read in like a synopsis of the show, like something that you read scrolling through Netflix kind of level. Like, you have people that live in a dystopic world that live behind walls to protect them from this thing that is the enemy that you learn more about as the show goes on, right? And so it starts off like just focusing mostly on the action and getting us there and like training your main characters and learning about them. Like your main cast of characters. And like that's all you think it is, but then it evolves into something completely different. Which, yeah. By the way, I would like to point out, the animation at the time when the show came out was insanely impressive. Like top tier action, like the feeling of motion and locomotion in this show was like bar none some of the best I'd seen. Like, you got people flying around with swords like Spider-Man. Come on now. Come on.
Yeah, and I don't want to belabor this too much, because if I'm being honest, I feel like there are more people out there who have seen Attack on Titan and are caught up with it than aren't. But I guess this is a last plea for if you want to engage in this discussion and read the subtext with us, I do encourage you to watch Attack on Titan and catch up with it. And as a final word for this, I actually want to ask you, Daily, because, you know, before you had caught up with the show, we had already drifted the idea to you of, hey, let's talk about Attack on Titan because some people think it's fascist, right? Mm-hmm. Now that you've caught up, I mean, can you maybe walk us through some of your thoughts? Because you were seeing it from that lens, right? Like, you were being teed up as some people think this is fascist.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, because I did, while I was watching, and you'll find it all over social media, there's that literal JPEG list of early warning signs of fascism, and I was kind of trying to see, like, what check marks off of that, and maybe this is, like, a good way to have that in mind while watching the show. So, of this list, you have like powerful and continuing nationalism. I can totally see that in the show because it's like humanity. We are the last of humanity. We must protect humans. Disdain for human rights. No, because the first part. Identification of enemies as a unifying cause. Yeah. Titans, supremacy of the military. It is a very militaristic society because of Titans. Yeah. Rampant sexism, not at all. Mm-hmm. This is a very asexual show, like agender almost.
Yeah, or like it doesn't like portray one gender as superior to the other.
Yeah, everyone's so. In the military, everyone's doing their own thing. The only time where it's like, ooh, gender is like, Mikasa's hot. And everyone knows it. Controlled mass media. Yes, but that comes up as a plot point. Obsession with national security, the walls, obviously. Religion and government intertwined. Yeah. Definitely. Corporate power protected, harder to discern, maybe. Yeah.
I don't think the society in the show is modern enough to really jump too hard into that.
Middle Ages. Labor power suppressed, again, harder to discern. Disdain for intellectuals and the arts. Obsession with crime and punishment. Rampant cronyism and corruption. And fraudulent elections. And some of these points come up much later in the plot, but as a whole, I guess I can see where some people are like, ooh, fascism. But then when you actually watch the entire narrative and how that clashes with what's happening with the characters that you're supposed to be sympathetic toward and the overall changing of the status quo throughout the narrative, it's not just like, whoa, we should be like this society, ?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, like, based on that checklist, right, I agree with you. I can see where a lot of those points come in. But I feel like for the first half of the show, you watch it, and even though it ticks all those checkboxes, it's not portrayed as a show that's like, you should be fascist like this. You should be like the scout regimen. You should be like the people who live in the walls because they're happy. Like, you watch them, they're not fucking happy.
No.
But then even beyond that, it doesn't feel like a show that is trying to say this is the way life should be. It's just like, here's a fun little fantasy story, right? And then once it starts dialing that political knob up to 11, it portrays all of these things as, oh, this is causing like rampant, you know, inhumane suffering.
Yeah, you know, strife.
Right. And at that point, it's like, okay, yes, it's portraying fascism, but it's not portraying it in a way that's fun or exciting. You should, like, you don't want to be on the side of fascism or whatever the fascist forces are in the show.
But they have cool uniforms and they do the salute where you give your heart to king and country.
Yeah, okay, you're right.
I'm humanity.
Yeah,
you're fascist now.
Honestly, I think the closest thing the show ever comes to like propaganda is its openings. And it's just because like that's the creative choice they came out, like, you know, just stylistically. Mm-hmm. You know, they kind of wanted to make it almost look like propaganda-esque footage, especially for like season 4.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that. Yeah.
And that's actually a good transition, because I think now we should open the floodgates and spoilers because we're just tiptoeing around shit. And yeah. I'm going to play the opening music or something like that, because it's fucking, it's good. I mean, regardless of what you think about the show, it's a fucking banger, that first song.
Yeah, it is.
So at the end of that music, at the end of the opening music, it'll be spoiler time, baby. So if you haven't watched it, catch up. And if you have, we'll see you on the other side.
Wir sind das Essen? Nein. Wir sind der Jäger.
So
I took 3 years of German.
Yeah. And that's all I know.
Sprechen Sie Deutsch?
You know way more than us, Daily, right?
I definitely have maintained where's the bathroom? Wo ist das Badezimmer?
And that's actually like a big plot point. Like, now that we can really get into spoilers, that's what season 4 is all fucking about, is the bathroom.
Where is the forget the basement. We're looking for the bathroom.
Right? Colin, I'm really glad that you brought up the openings, because I think that's one of the interesting vectors to kind of analyze when it comes to this, you know, fascism discussion, right? Because you look at Attack on Titan, the season 1 opening is very militaristic. It's very like pro-military vibes, right?
Yeah.
And season 2 gets even further into that with its openings. Again, it looks like a literal propaganda film, like join the military. But then when you
get spliced with anime crazy madness action. Yeah,
sure. But I mean even the music itself, I mean, it's a good song, but it's also like it has this weirdly patriotic vibe to it.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, even the second season, one of the openings, like Shinzo Sasageyo, right, like give your heart, give, like, you know, that's a very, I mean, that's their military slogan.
You're giving your heart.
Yeah, it's their Semper Fi.
Shinzo Sasageyo.
But then when you get to season 4, you notice you don't see any faces. Everyone's just a faceless soldier. Everyone's just a number, right?
Like, no one picked up on that. Good point.
No one has personality in the opening. Even the song itself, I would argue, I mean, it's fine, but it's not as good as the other ones. And the song itself has no personality, and it's very, very repetitive. Almost, it's like the rote repetition of military life. So even like looking at the openings, it's not like the pride in military power feels less and less interesting as it goes on.
I mean, that disillusionment happens right fast. I thought, and one of the reasons why I was kind of turned off by the series to begin with was I thought it was going to be like a very like, you know, we're giving our all for humanity and we're not questioning our place in it and we're just doing what the military tells us to do. But like, first of all, everyone tells Aaron, don't join the Survey Corps. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. And then even after he joins, he becomes pretty quickly disillusioned with it. And like, I don't see this. What's the point of what we're doing?
Yeah. And that's the thing, though, because if you watch just the first season in like a bubble, right? You just watch the first season by itself. I mean, yeah, there's a little bit of that to my knowledge. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen season 1. So if I misspeak, definitely catch me on it. But I remember watching it and it very much coming across the shonen of, like, it's a shonen, right? Where Eren Jaeger, obviously a shonen anime protagonist, becomes more and more powerful, goes through military training, and he eventually becomes a badass. And then, of course, later on, yeah, becomes a Titan. And then I'm guessing at that point, I was like, I'm guessing this is going to end with him killing Titan God. And like, you know, and like, hooray, humanity saved. Obviously, that's not the case. Yeah. They start laying little Easter eggs here and there to like clue you in to what I've eventually did come to the hypothesis of, like, they're not the only ones that exist in this world. And there's like a whole world beyond the walls and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I thought that was interesting because it does start to divert hard away from the whole notion of it being like a shonen anime. Like, this is something entirely different.
Surprisingly and, cerebral.
Yeah. And it almost takes a turn so hard that, like, yes, it's heavily political, but it also basically just turns into suffering porn by the fourth season.
Like, just Reiner and Eren are
just... Dude, everyone's
just
fucking suffering in this show. Like, no one is left, like, left alone. It's just all that. And that's why, like, I don't know how you can walk away from this show taking away that it's like, absolutely pro-fascism, et cetera, like, pro-whatever, like, these people are doing, you know, because this is... directly showing you, like, these are the consequences of war. This is like this is why escalated conflict is terrible for the for existence, really.
Yeah, it's
very nuanced.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think this would be a good time to bring up Patient Zero, the catalyst for this is Attack on Titan fascist. I mean, our episode, but also just the discourse around it and the discussion around it. It was this Polygon op-ed, Polygon, the video game site, you might have heard of it. That was published in 2019 by, well, it was written by Tom Spielman. And in it, he's essentially arguing that Attack on Titan has fascist underpinnings that can't be missed or can't be ignored, was his point.
Mm.
And where he was at in the story was this, the chapter where Eren gets broken out of prison by the Jaegerists and dons the Jaegerist jacket. And it's like that really, that scene where it's just like abs and sunshine.
Abs.
Abs and sunshine.
Abs,
that's,
though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember the abs. I don't know about the sunshine.
Yeah. It was like the sun setting. It was like becoming twilight. But that was the chapter he was on. And it was just this very, to him, this dog whistle of like, the Jaegerists are the true... This is what the story's been leading up to, the Jaegerists, right? So I would boil down Spielman's arguments into three main prongs. One, Attack on Titan is anti-Semitic. Two, it's anti-Korean. And three, it is pro-fascist. I think it'd be great for us to maybe like dive into each one of those one at a time, explore his arguments, and find our thoughts. How do y'all feel about that?
Yeah, sure. What do you think that would be the best way to start?
I say let's start with the anti-Semitism. I think that's the really big one. One that I think is easy to understand why you could say that.
Yeah, I remember when that was going around, and because I hadn't, you know, watched or read it, I was like, I can't refute this inherently, but it sounds wrong. And a lot of the arguments that I had heard at the time was mostly based on the morphology of Titans themselves and making a parallel to that with super racist caricatures of Jewish people. Because I don't like you have to go back into some super ancient anti-Semitism, like pre World War II anti-Semitism. Do you guys know that people said that, you know, Jewish people, they have curly hair, it's to hide their horns because they're part monster? I'm used to just like regular ass anti-Semitism, but I had to learn about a whole new, like, people used to say that actually Jewish people are part monster, they're part devil, they're hiding their tails and their horns and they can't hide their noses or whatever. So that people were saying that the designs of the Titans, specifically the pure Titans, was a callback to that weird belief that Jewish people are monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is like sort of a dark area for me, I think, because I mean, of course, watching the show from the offset, I always thought the designs of the Titans themselves were, first of all, I thought it was a fairly original idea to have like these humanoid monsters that were just very like off kilter, but it was like, their designs were just off enough to make you feel uncomfortable, and a lot of that was communicated in the way that they move, especially, right? From an animation perspective. But, like, I never knew, like, never once did I think that it could be rooted in something as nefarious as, like, anti-Semitism. I just thought it was, like, you know, to create an enemy who was just, like, looked close enough to be human, but, like, felt really off.
Yeah, There's an early quote by Isayama, too, that he based a lot of the Titan designs on drunk people that he would see out and about.
I could see that.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, yeah. But I mean, of course, we later on learn that, you know, the pure Titans are just Titans that have, or people that have been squirted with the spinal fluid.
Yeah. Excellent word choice.
Yeah, Eldians, yeah, specifically.
Injected.
Right.
Yeah. Well, is it always Eldians? That mm-hmm. Yeah, they always get injected. That's right.
Yeah. It's like the racial. Well, it's not only that they're always injected, but they're the only humans that can transform into Titans.
That's right.
With so far only Eldians can turn into Titans, but not all Eldians can turn into Titans.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Well, no, I think all of them can. It's just a matter of if they drink the spinal fluid or get injected in them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or you had to be a descendant of Ymir.
Well, all of them are. They're all descendants of Ymir.
Or have one of the, like, eat one of the specific Titans. What do you call them?
Yeah, there was the nine Titans have the special powers.
Right.
Yeah.
That's how you become like a true Titan or whatever they're called, right?
A disciple, right?
Titan shifter.
Getting myself all mixed
up. Titan
shifter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the founding Titan, etc.
Right. So I don't know. When it comes to the Titan designs, I've always thought that what they are is just they have one exaggerated feature or two exaggerated features, like short arms or really, really long arms, big eyes, huge, terrifying smile, like the Titan that ate Eren's mom, because that Titan was a stepmom. So then when I saw the Titan with the really big nose, I didn't link it to like, oh, that's a caricature of Jewish people. I just linked it to, oh, that's his weird look, right? In the same way that that Titan has really long arms. That's his weird look, right?
Yeah.
It didn't feel racially charged to me.
It's more of a like becoming a Titan is like an unstable process.
Yeah.
And no one's going to come out looking like a human, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Eldians, too, as a race in this show, are, like, in and of themselves, fairly diverse when it comes to, like, skin color and...
hair color, eye color.
Exactly. And, I mean, they reference how, you know, different countries exist later on, especially, like, you know, they reference Mikasa coming from... They just say, like, kind of generically Oriental country. I think or something.
Yeah, I mean she's basically Japanese. She's from Japan.
They kind of imply that, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think where a lot of people throw a lot of shade at Isayama, right, is when it's finally revealed, when the outer world is revealed, right, and then you find out that Eldians live in a ghetto, right, and they are forced to wear armbands with stars on them, and the military is always patrolling outside, and they have to get a permit to go outside even once, right? Like, all of that screams very Nazi Germany and how they treated Jewish people, right?
Right.
And I think a lot of people saw that moment as the mask off moment, where it's like, his anti-Jew views have been revealed, and it's like...
Mm-hmm.
No.
I mean, okay, so I can kind of see that, because a lot of that imagery is very on the nose, right? I mean, like, when you say, oh, there's one group of people subjugating another group of people in a ghetto and force them to wear armbands, you can't help but think of Nazi Germany and how they treated Jewish people. And so I can see it maybe being like, maybe he could have handled it better, like Isayama could have handled it better or teed it up differently, but I still feel like it's a bit of a leap to see that and then say he is anti-Semitic.
Yeah
It also ignores the larger context of why are the Eldians in the rest of the world placed into ghettos, and what's going on with them and the Marlians.
Especially when they spent the past three seasons literally having you build sympathy for the Eldians to begin with in Paradis. So like, I don't understand how you can make that through line. I mean, literally, Eren himself, like, is our MC. He is an Eldian. We're supposed to build sympathy with him. Obviously, they use the device where they kind of flip it on its head, and through his own motivations, he becomes the leader of a what would you call it? Like a resistance group, essentially. Like, I mean, I think that's an interesting storytelling device. And now you're like, now here's this character that, you know, I built up all this sympathy with, you know, you watch him try to take his revenge because he watched his mom die. And it's basically saying that, like, everyone has a backstory, and here's this particular character's motivations. We're going to make you care about him. Now we're going to flip it on its head. And now it's like, you can't. Now, I, at least me personally, me as the watcher, like, I don't know if I can follow you down this path, but I'm going to watch what happens. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's how I interpret Aaron. You're supposed to feel with Aaron as a character. And so,
yeah.
But like all that is to say, like the Eldians are like you're supposed to sympathize with them by the time you even get to season four anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be one thing if it was like actually you're all inherently evil, and deserve to be an oppressed minority. But that's not the case. It's like, guess what? Everyone in this world has committed horrible atrocities, but we're actively asked by the narrative then through what happens with Gabby to question whether or not we can continually punish people in the modern day for what happened with their ancestors hundreds of years ago.
Yeah, and this is a point that I think I'm going to be bringing up a lot in this episode, and that depiction is an endorsement, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so I think, like, let's say, yeah, I mean, I would actually be willing to bet Isayama did base some of the Eldians on Jewish history, right? I mean, the armband is kind of a giveaway. It's very reminiscent of it, right? Yeah. But so let's say it is all, like, he is saying, yes, the Marlians are treating Jewish people horribly. When you look at it in the context of the story, you don't sympathize or even empathize with the Marlians as a people. You empathize with the characters that you learn about, mm-hmm. like Falco and Gabby.
Reiner.
And then through them, and Reiner, yeah, Reiner is just always suffering. But through them, you kind of learn their disillusion with the Marlian ideology as well. Are they right? Kind of no. If you come away from watching Attack on Titan, like you come away watching three seasons of the Eldians fighting for their freedom, and then suddenly you watch season four and you're like, no, actually, yeah, the Eldians deserve to rot. Like, you know, like, I would think that you are not processing a story. And not even, like, I don't want to say correctly, because you can process stories a lot of ways, but you're missing so much context and almost intending to misinterpret the text,
right,
to be angry about it.
Mm-mm. Yeah. And that's not to accuse Tom Spielman of anything, but it strikes me just as very strange after having watched as much as I have that this is what he came away with.
Yeah, I don't know. It comes across to me like you were looking, like you had a narrative and you were looking. It was like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Where he was like looking for notions of that to back his own story. But even so, yeah, like to reinforce you guys' points, I just don't understand how you come away with that. With that point, and the fact that this show to me right now is just a fucking 5-car pileup, like just a massive car wreck, and I'm just watching it happen.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be like watching Star Wars and saying Star Wars is fascist because there's an empire in it, and they like have clone troopers, stormtroopers, where they like mindlessly brainwash those people to just pew pew and always miss. And it's like, yeah, that's pretty shitty of the empire. They do suck. I admit that. But do you watch Star Wars and think the empires are correct in this universe? They are the right ones.
Yeah, no. Like, literally no one does. Like, I mean, in this show, I come away with, like, this show is telling me war is terrible. Everyone is, like, no one really wants to be a part of it, but, like, they have all these notions that were built up through their ancestors, and they think they need to go to conflict, but they really don't need to, and it just feels like senseless violence, and the narrative here is, like, war is senseless violence, and it can be stopped, but you're gonna watch these people that, like, I'm not rooting for anyone anymore, you know? I'm not rooting for anyone. Yeah. I'm just here to see how this plays out now. That's where the story is going.
A lot of it is in fascism. You don't question the state. We live to serve the state. We're stronger together in like one Reich or whatever. Whereas I feel like overall in Attack on Titan, it continually asks us to like question the motivations of your leaders. What are they keeping from you? What history is being buried here? What information are you not being given? Which turns out to be a lot of information. And it's crazy too, even very early on, we have people very high up in the army basically saying like, actually, they're just trying to, you know, we have to have Titans to fight against. Otherwise, we're just going to fight within ourselves. And that was Pixis, who that's what I'll give Spielman here is that, yeah, it's kind of like the whole dot Pixis thing is pretty weird.
Mm. Yeah, so I guess that brings us to our second point, right? Where Spielman argues that Attack on Titan is anti-Korean, right? And this, I think, is probably his strongest argument in that Pixis, the bald mustachioed general, right, of Paradis, he is based on Akiyama Yoshifuru, who was a general in Japan in like the 1920s, but he's been in the army like since like the 1880s or so. And he was involved in the Sino-Japanese War. He was involved in the Russo-Japanese War, I think is what you'd call that one. And essentially, a lot of his actions led to Japan's horrible subjugation of Chinese people and Korean people, because, you know, that was around the time that Japan took over Korea. Imperialism did, right? And that led to a whole host of horrible things, like comfort women, just generally treating Koreans as second-class citizens, genocide, etc. It was really horrible, right? And for Isayama to base Pixis off of that person in history, I mean, he has gone on record saying that he thinks Yoshifuru is a hero, a Japanese war hero, which outside of the scope of Japanese history, perhaps maybe he's not a hero. Maybe he's not a good person.
Some war crimes up in there. Yeah. That's the one thing I'm definitely gonna be like, cause I remember before having this context about who Pixis was based on, he's a charming guy. He's like, I'm gonna go do my duty. Sorry, I can't play chess anymore. He drinks on the job, but that's seen as like a quirk, and he's smart. He's not just blindly obeying the government, but he seems to have like some of his own agenda. He is one of the main people to vouch for Eren when people are like, maybe we should, you know, just kill him because he can turn into a Titan. And that's unprecedented at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because he also spearheaded like when you hit, I think it's season 3. When they get through the whole discovering King Fritz is actually like a fraud, he's a fraudulent king. There's like these descendants of whatever who's like the true king, and then they bring in Historia to be the queen. Like they upend that whole thing, and the military higher ups discover that for themselves, and then they have like that episode, which I thought was like super satisfying at that point in the show, where they're like, we're gonna print this on all the fucking newspapers. We need to spread the word about this, that like the government has been lying to you this whole time. And that's when like you do start to like creep into more of like this is turning into a very political show, because people start talking about like, oh, this is essentially a military coup. Like now we have a military led government instead of a monarchy. And people had their own concerns there. But I mean, Commander Pixis was very much on board with that whole thing. Like, he was convinced he's going to take the side of objective truth up to that point in the show is the way he came across.
Yeah.
So they weren't like painting him in a bad light. And I will say, as far as like the historical Japanese context behind this with Isayama, like I'm actually like pretty in the dark about this too. So this is a blind spot for me, but.
Yeah. I mean, the historical Japanese context, you know, I mean, it's kind of hard to defend to say like he was like Yoshifuru was a good person, especially if you happen to be Korean or Chinese.
Yeah. It doesn't sound great. based on what I'm hearing.
Yeah. But. It definitely isn't great, but it'd be the same thing as like if someone wrote a story today and was like, oh, I based my protagonist on Christopher Columbus, the great American hero,
yeah,
who does still have a day dedicated to him for some reason. Obviously, you know, us wokies know better and know that Christopher Columbus is responsible for so much genocide and horrible treatment of Native Americans. Yeah. But, you know, it's just... If I had to bet, I can't say for sure because I've never took like Japanese history in Japan, but I could see, you know, Isayama maybe learned about Yoshifuru as a Japanese hero in his time in school, right? Because when you are Japanese, it's good when Japanese people succeed, even if that means it's at the expense of Korean people, right? Which is a really shitty way to look at things, but it's like, I can see why he dug his heels in to be like, oh no, he was a war hero, you know?
Yeah, and this might be a future episode, but Japan isn't a utopia, you freaking weebs, myself included.
Same.
There's some nationalism that likes to ignore a lot of those aforementioned war crimes and instead be like, y'all being too sensitive. Mm-hmm. If we question Japan, then what do we have left?
Yeah, I mean, and to clarify, I think, you know, the normal person in Japan is probably more on board with like kind of like, yeah, no, like the Japanese government did some shitty things. It's the Japanese government that's kind of like, you know, that has their hands in a lot of that messaging.
Well, yeah, I mean, Shinzo Abe, you know, famous prime minister up until fairly
who
recently.
Who resigned, by the way.
Yeah, he was very pro-military, pro-right end of the political spectrum kind of guy. Like, even though Japan doesn't have a military, technically, they have a self-defense force, and under Shinzo Abe, that defense force has expanded. So that's an interesting, you know, increase in military power, right?
Yeah. I did read the part in the article where it says something about him, like, reinterpreting the Japanese constitution about, like, self-defense. And how, like, he somehow reinterpreted that to actually mean they can build up their forces, not the other way around.
Yep.
So I'm like, okay. Yeah. All right. It sounds a lot like the way, like, we can just interpret the Constitution here.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I do think nationalism and it seems like it can be a problem in Japan in the same way that right now nationalism is kind of a problem in America as well. Which is why I think this discussion is pretty salient, you know, even though it's about a different country, right? It's like fascism is on the rise around the world, excitingly so. And I think it's fair to like look at Attack on Titan and think about it critically and say, okay, yes, it is depicting a lot of pro-fascist talking points, right? And I think to go as far as to say that Attack on Titan is anti-Korean, I don't think the show in and of itself is anti-Korean. You know, it's not like any of the forces take over the other side and forces their women to become comfort women or anything like that. I think it just is more like it's death of the author, right? It's that maybe Isayama holds some anti-Korean views.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't think there's any direct allegories there. There's no like direct through lines.
I mean, it'd be like, could you, I guess I can't speak from authority on this because you know, I'm not the biggest Harry Potter person, but I mean, Daly, would you say that in Harry Potter, there's a lot of obvious anti-trans text that you could read into?
No. Even the one instance, which might have been like, haha, like to make a boggart less scary, that's a man, put him in women's clothes. That's hilarious. I can't really be like, that's a stretch.
Yeah, I would say that's a pretty basic, pretty big nitpick.
Like, you know, comedy at the time, especially where it's like, ooh, you're in a funny hat.
That's funny.
Whoa, funny hats are funny. No way. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to go. Her later works, definitely, but not in Harry Potter. I can't say that. Right. And I can't say that really for Attack on Titan in my experience.
Yeah, and I will say, obviously, like, the manga is at this time of recording is over, right? The manga for Attack on Titan's finished. Anime, we just finished the first half of season 4, which is the final season. So we're going to get the latter half, I believe, later this year in December. So I don't know how it ends. I know the end is a little bit contentious among the manga readers in some parties. But if I had to guess based on how the show is going right now, like this show is not going to have a happy ending. I don't think this is going to be like glory to the fascist regime of Eren Yeager. You know what I'm saying? Like, I highly doubt it's going to end that way.
But it could.
I mean, I suppose it could. I mean, but the way it's going right now is like everyone's just fucking killing each other. So,
I mean, when I started Attack on Titan in 2013, I didn't think I'd be talking about its fascist rhetoric 8 years later. But,
dude, I don't even know if I could tell you what fascism was 8 years ago.
Probably.
Yeah. Weren't we all so young and naive?
Simpler folk.
Simpler times. Like,
isn't that a vocab word in social studies or something? I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably. But I think, yeah, let's dive into the elephant in the room. It's something that, you know, we've touched on in the last two major arguments here, but is Attack on Titan pro-fascist itself? That's the third major point in Spielman's op-ed, is that there are a lot of pro-fascist talking points in Attack on Titan. One of the biggest ones is, and it's the one that he, like, I would say centers his major argument around, is the rise of the Jaegerists, right? Which is military might to get what you want, which is to destroy. He likens it to like how there's that right wing fascist talking point of like the globalists are controlling everything, right? And, you know, that the globalists is shitty dog whistle for like Jewish people, right? But with where the Jaegerists are, I don't think it's targeted at like the secret Illuminati that is Jewish people. I think it's just targeted at like literally everyone who isn't us.
Yep.
Which doesn't feel as dog whistly. I mean, it's still definitely not great. It's military might to subjugate others. But I wouldn't go so far as to be like, it is, you know, anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, and one thing I kept on the lookout for, I was waiting with the whole revelation that there's like the Eldians and then the Marlians, of like, well, one is inherently better than the other, like genetically, obviously, but that didn't really happen. Even with the fact that like they can turn into Titans,
yeah,
like they use that power to create a, you know, Eldian supremacy for many years, for hundreds of years. But that wasn't framed as like a good thing in any way, shape, or form.
No.
It was like, that was shitty. And you, I guess, got what was coming to you. But then it's more about the cycle of hatred than it is about one true race being supreme over the others. But the Jaegerists are continuing that cycle of hatred by being like, well, actually, we're going to, you know, protect the Eldians over everything else, fuck everyone else.
Yeah, but I will come in here and say that, like, I mean, to your point, yeah, like both sides, the Eldians and the Marlians, are like, yo, Titans, like, okay, the Titans like executed people and that was terrible. Like both sides kind of agree on that point at this, you know, in this part of the show. They're like, yeah, no, like people were dead and we killed a lot of people. And so now remember that Aaron and Zach's plan is just like, yeah, no, we're going to end the lineage of Titans. We're just going to cut it off, right? Like, because that's their plan, right? Is to, like, sterilize Titans.
Oh, his half-brother?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Zach, right?
It's Zeke.
Shit, Zeke. My bad. Yeah. I thought I was...
How dare you accuse Zach of such things?
Poor Zach. Zach, here's his
telling.
Name. Zeke, perk up. No, Zeke. Like, they, you know, they plot to basically sterilize Titans and cut off the lineage. Like, this is the last generation of Titans. No more will be born. Eldians will essentially just, like, live until they die of old age. And, like, that's the solution right now. You know, so it's not really a narrative of race supremacy. It's more like, no, we realize this was really shitty and this is the way we're going to handle it. But in their eyes, they have to commit this violence in order for future violence to stop.
Yeah.
Right.
And also on that point, it's not the Marlians doing it to the Eldians. It's not one race doing it to the others.
Hmm.
It's two crazy people. Right. Essentially.
Yeah.
Taking things in their own hands for their own race, which, that is shitty. I don't know if I would call that fascist, that in and of itself, right?
Sure.
Now, where there is fascism in this show is the military might, especially, right? You see it on literally every side, and every side military speaks, right? Mm-hmm. Within the walls, it's the military coup that revolutionizes the world within the walls, and the military takes over everything because might is right. outside the walls. In the old times, the Eldians subjugated everyone with their military might of the Titans. And then once the Marlians got the upper hand, they subjugated the Eldians with their military might and even used the Eldians' Titans to then further their military, the Marlian military might over the rest of the world, right? On all sides, it's military, military, military. Even the Jaegerists, who are in this really complicated story, who are the oppressed Eldians, who are feeling oppressed by other Eldians.
Which Marlians are part of it too, FYI.
It's true. Who are then breaking free of their oppressed oppression to oppress everyone else in the world.
That's a lot of oppress.
With there, military
there's an
might.
Ultimate goal here of oppression. Not good.
Yeah.
And we're not, and we're framed as the audience, we're not supposed to be like, yeah, Aaron, oppress everyone.
Yeah.
As vengeance.
Yeah. And
we're like, Aaron, what are you doing?
Like, what are you doing? And obviously, you know, Zeke and Aaron's plan in the long run isn't going to completely end, you know, human on human violence, whatever. Because obviously, as we see very clearly at the beginning of season four, Marley has a conflict with yet a third country, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I can't remember mm-hmm. the name of. But it's like some sort of surrogate Middle East, like sort of stand in. Obviously, like, even if Zeke and Aaron's plan succeeds, that doesn't mean future conflict won't be, like, wars are still going to happen. People are still going to fight. You know, this mm-hmm. is just like, this is just a way to pull like Titans out of the whole thing. But the ironic thing about that, though, is like, between Paradis and also Marley, you go from Paradis to Marley, which has like all these advancements in technology as far as like going to human wars goes. Like, it's more an analog to like World War I/World War II technology that we had in our actual history. Whereas, you know, you had Paradis, who was a little bit behind. They were like a little bit pre-industrial revolution, and they had these specialized weapons that, you know, actually use fossil fuels, which I thought is interesting, but weapons that are particular for their use case against the Titans. Where I'm going with this is saying that like Marley's already advanced so much with their weapon technology that like eventually Titans are going to be obsolete anyway. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, the minute they come up with the atomic bomb Titans and nukes and shit, it's like, okay, done deal.
At this moment, that's a good allegory for the Titans. It's like an instant nuke.
Right. I mean, that's the Colossal Titan. The Colossal Titan is essentially a fucking nuke. Like, mm-hmm. Armin, the minute he transforms, is like, it's an explosion.
Right. Huge one.
Yeah.
Too, right. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's where we're getting to, where, like, I think Daly, you had a really good point in that, like, yes, there's fascism, but you don't root for it. You don't think it's good. And Colin, you've been alluding to this too, in that like you're saying you don't know who to root for in the show anymore, right?
Yeah.
I feel like for me, at this point where we're at, I'm rooting for Mikasa and Armin because on a personal level, they've just been betrayed by their best friend, right? Like mm-hmm. horribly so.
Yeah, they're probably the only ones that don't have any skin in any of the games that are going on here.
Right. And then like on a political level, I think they represent the people who are just trying to do the right thing, regardless of government, military, etc., right? Like, they're bogged down by the military because of its structure, but in terms of their motivations and their morality, you get the sense of, like, they're doing these horrible things that they don't want to do because they're human. And when you watch them on the screen, I mean, this might just be me, maybe, but I feel like that Isayama wants the audience to empathize with these characters that are struggling with the things they have to do.
Mm.
Right?
Okay, yeah.
Because that's who the layperson is. Your average person doesn't want to be part of a nationalist military that believes in fascism and subjugating others, right? Nor do they want to be the Eldians trapped in the walls as an analog to Jewish people in the 1930s and 40s, right? They would probably be, if they were in this world, somewhere in the middle, where they don't know who's right, who's wrong, who's suffering, who isn't, who's suffering more or worse. It's Reiner. But, like, you know, it's like, we don't know, like, we're going to be paralyzed by all this information because everything sucks. The world sucks. It's all suffering. You know, that if there's any message that I get out of Attack on Titan so far, it's nihilism. In that everything is bad. It's just a different kind of bad.
Yeah. It's like in the first couple seasons, it was just, what the fuck are you supposed to do against the face of like this massive like we don't even understand Titan power, and you can't really do anything in a real Titan fight unless you're the most elite of elite. And now it's just on a grander scale where even though we understand the Titans, there's a broader world that it's like, fuck, what are we supposed to do about this? I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
And all throughout, I think from the very beginning, we're never supposed to be like you said, the Aaron isn't our layman. Aaron isn't our like person that we're supposed to like, oh, this is who I'd be if I was like dropped into an isekai. Aaron is a fanatic. Aaron is an extremist, I think, from the very beginning, because he's like, I just want to kill Titans. And he freaks people out with that attitude. Mm-hmm. Even the people that are like, yeah, fuck Titans. He's always had that in him. I think from the moment his mom got chomped on by his stepmom in a weird turn of events.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that detail.
Yeah, that was one of the moments that I was like, oh, but I digress. I don't think we're ever supposed to have been like, Aaron will have a totally nuanced and well thought out plan on how to proceed in this world.
Because I don't know, because I'm definitely of the mind of, you know, Zeke and Aaron's plan. Yeah, they if they succeed, like, people are just going to find other ways to fight each other. You know, that's all they're really doing is taking away a weapon.
Question real quick. I know, Colin, you just said you don't know. Oh. Robert, do you know how the manga ends?
No, I don't.
I do. Oh, so wow. I will obviously not say anything, but we are asking the correct questions.
Oh, okay.
Good.
Yeah, because I feel like that's, after all this suffering and nihilism is over with, I think that's like really the only philosophical direction you can head with this, is just like, yeah, no, humans are shitty and we're gonna keep fighting. And I'm really surprised we haven't gotten that party of characters yet that's just like, no, fuck all of humanity. We're killing them all. We're all gonna die.
I think that's Aaron, if the closest we've got so far, yeah. Right? But I do actually want to focus on Aaron here, because I think his place in the story is maybe one of the subtextual catalysts for. I mean, I can't speak for Spielman, but I feel like Aaron as the protagonist is one of the driving forces as to why he was worried about this fascist subtext, right? Because I think with most stories, when you have a main character, you expect to sympathize with them until the end of their journey. You expect to put yourself in their shoes because you want to be immersed in their story and how they see their world through their eyes.
Right.
And I mean, think about like every Disney movie, think about most other anime, right? Like Goku is the hero of his show. You want to be Goku. You think Goku is cool. That's why he keeps getting fucking brought back to life. Right.
Yeah. Like, even though he puts his entire, you know, universe at risk just to have a selfish fight. But that's besides the point.
Yeah. That makes sense. You know? but then when you get to Aaron, right, it's like in the first few seasons, you really do sympathize with him. You're like, yeah, Titans ate his mom. I'd be pissed at Titans too. Kill all the Titans. Hell yeah, Aaron. Fucking do it, man. You got this. And then as he evolves and changes, you know, like he's this character who's constantly told no, right? Like all the time. He gets kidnapped. He gets beaten the shit out of. Whenever he's about to beat Reiner, Bertholdt comes in and drops his fucking colossal body on him, right? Like at every turn, Aaron is deprived of his satisfaction. And then
yes,
he just can't finish. Then
he can't finish. But then season 4 happens, and he can finish whatever he fucking wants, because now he has the power. He puts himself in the right place at the right time all the time, and he gets what he wants. And then you start seeing, oh, wait, all those motivations that I sympathize with him about, that led to thousands of children and people dying.
Oh, yeah.
That's not good. And the story tees him up as like not a good person anymore. Even Mikasa, who's like girlfriend's sister, is like, hey, Aaron, you just killed children. And Eren's like, cool, I've got to kill that thing next. You know, like, you watch that and it's hard for, like, it's a turning point in the show where you're like, this main character I've been rooting for is getting real weird. And that's when you have to ask yourself, is this a story where the main character is still a good guy? Kind of no.
Yeah.
Yeah. If Naruto midway through started to be like, you know what, the Akatsuki's got some good ideas, and I'm going to, when I become Hokage / dictator, I'm going to utilize them. You wouldn't be like, yeah, Naruto, you mm-hmm. always know what's yeah. best.
Even though Itachi was the best character on that whole show. But that's the other podcast that we did a while ago.
That's just facts. Yeah. We've established this.
It's one of our most. I think our most viewed episode. Anyway,
let's just talk about Naruto for some reason.
To veer more into like the opinion section, I think though all of this dynamic and all of this convolution and all of this philosophical, like the change of the main character, bringing in all these political things. I think that that's what makes this anime and this story stand above a lot of others. Mm-hmm. You know, if this was a basic shonen anime, yeah, it would still be probably cool and fun, I guess, to a degree, because the animation is insane. It's over the top. If this was just like a story where Eren becomes a Titan and kills God, like, yeah, it would still be like, oh, yeah, this was a cool anime. This is essentially just a retelling of Gurren Lagann, kind of in a sense. But like, it's cool. But this, the whole political turn of his character and the story in general is really what makes this interesting. And so, and I also, too, sidebar, I don't think I've asked you this yet, Daily, but I'm really curious what you thought of, like, that halfway through season three turn into what the show is now. Like, what like how you reacted and how you felt about that.
Like, with everything, like, with, like, Historia and stuff? Yeah, so
when we go into the basement, essentially, and figure out that there's another world. Mm.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So that was my reaction. What the fuck? At this point, I had some spoilers that at least the walls were definitely not the only place that humanity was still living. I didn't realize that it was like an island, and then that there's a greater continent where there's still people living, and that's where Eren's dad was from and stuff like that. And that there's, what is this, this picture wasn't painted by human hands. It was created by, it's something called a photograph. And it was just like, oh my God. Oh my God.
The real world is out there.
The real world is out there. That's when, it really was the moment of like, this is not like a shonen anime. This yeah. is, very cerebral. This is, I would even say like a political thriller at that point where it's like, hey, the government has been lying to us and we have mass amnesia and this is the way the world really is. Because I guess the whole thing about like, we Titans just showed up 100 years ago. Don't know what to tell you. They just did.
Yeah.
I didn't know if they were going to explore that or not. I thought that maybe it's just like, we'll forget about the past. This is a now problem. Mm-hmm. But no, it is all about the past, actually. Good writing. Oh, good yeah. shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I caught up with the anime, right? And then I started reading through the manga. I stopped myself before like going beyond the anime because I'm like, no, I want to wait. I want to experience that week-to-week ride. But rereading the manga, like, when you know what's going to happen, you see Isayama drop so many hints throughout he knew the ending since chapter one, or at least what it was going to kind of look like, you know. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of layers added to it. Like there's one where like in season two, before you know Bert Holtz, the colossal Titan, when he's in danger, he's about to bite his hand. There's like a little frame of him doing that. And if you catch that, you'd be like, why is a human trying to bite his hand? Right. And even if you go back to season one, there's a scene where fucking when Eren like is training, he bonks his head at one point. There's like Titan healing steam coming off of his head. And you know, you don't really notice it. But when you do, it's like, fuck, dude, this is a smart show. And I think trying to bury it because, oh, it depicts fascism and I'm scared of seeing something that I disagree with. It takes away your ability to just appreciate a very well-told story that's going on right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think that I mean, well, it didn't help that it took so long for the show to come out, like at all. I think I know a lot of people and myself too that have like fallen off the show because of just the length. But when you watch the show consecutively, like Daly did, and then you get to that whirlwind of information that is the back half of season three, you know, because you have essentially you're getting bits and pieces literally for 2.5 seasons, you know, and then you get to the back half of season three and it's like, holy shit, like my whole world is being turned upside down. And that's the impact I think the story was going and that Isayama intended the whole time. Right. And so like to the point where you get into season four and it's like, holy shit, now I'm just essentially watching a World War One historical fiction drama.
With Titans.
Yeah, yeah. With Titans.
The biggest conflict for me stopped being after the basement stopped being about Titans at all. Any kind of like the physical fight that wasn't going to be near as hard as, okay, but how do we get this information out there now when there are like people that actively don't want that information to become available? How do we tell people who thought that they were the last of humanity that actually, no, we've been part of a weird conspiracy for about 100 years now, and that this is actually the way of the world? And the fact that we're able to do that and also have like all these bad, like there's a serial killer also and like kidnapping and Titans on top of that. It's good shit. This is good shit.
Yeah, and even the reveal of the basement, like the actual the basement episodes itself, even in that, it has a little bit of like, to me, anti-fascist rhetoric in that, you know, Erwin Smith, right? The gambler, you know, the heroic leader of the Survey Corps who's always ready to gamble, right? And all of his gambles pay off, including the one that he knows he's gonna die, right? Like, he's good at what he does, even when it's going to kill him. And there's that scene before in season three when the Beast Titan's throwing rocks at the Survey Corps, and it's like, well, if we sit here, we're going to die and we can't retreat, and if we die and or retreat, we'll never find out the truth. And that's like all Erwin wants. He just wants to see whatever is in the basement, right? And there's that little scene where he's talking to Levi, he's having a heart-to-heart with him, and he's like, I know the sacrifices I've been making. I'm standing on a mountain of corpses, right? And it's just that weight, like you see the weight of his sacrifices. And then to you, to me, the viewer, it's like, huh, military causes a lot of death. Military kill people. Many people die for goal in military.
Yeah. And it turns out, headline.
So, wait, no, make it more simple.
ELI 5.
Military kill.
Okay, I get it now.
Okay, yeah, so you watch that and you're like, okay, so from a story perspective, I'm really rooting for Erwin because I want him to see the truth and find the truth, because that truth is what has been building up in the show since fucking episode one or two, right? But then the show turns it back on you as like, but is finding out the truth worth it? Like, think about how many hundreds of maybe thousands of soldiers have died all in the name of military might just to find this truth. Is it worth it? Right. And that to me is like saying, you know, fascism ain't great. It leads to a lot of death. Do you think a lot of death is a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm going to venture and say bad. Death, bad.
Yeah. Lots of death, bad. And I guess, you know, to me, this is a question I really think we should explore here. And I want to ask you is Attack on Titan is one of the most popular, you know, anime. Just period.
Yeah,
right now, really, right? Like, yeah, like season three, part two, and season four are both in the top 10 of my anime list, which is the most objective ranking for anything ever. But I mean, people know about it. Every time every new episode dropped on Sundays, Twitter, like mainstream Twitter, it was trending, right? Like, people know and like Attack on Titan. Is it dangerous that such a popular show happens to depict fascism?
I mean, saying outright that it's just a depiction, I mean, there's no harm in that. I mean, we've been flooded with World War II, which is essentially, this is what this is an analog for World War I / World War II. I mean, we've been flooded with World War II media for as long as I can remember. I mean,
that's the History Channel, baby. That and Aliens.
Yeah.
That's all you get.
Yeah, so I think it's always going to be worse if we just... outright ignore, you know, different points of views, different, you know, political happenings, history, you know, just ignoring that any of these things happened, than we are just to like face them head on and depict them. Because, you know, if you stop having the conversation, then what happens? You know, it just kind of gets lost, or it's found again, but in a way that's not great.
Mm-hmm. I would say what's more dangerous here, and I don't mean to pick on Mr. Spielman. I'm sure he felt he had very good reasons to write the opinion that he had. And again, I think we agreed with parts of it, but other parts, not so much. I think it's worse to make that blanket, like, Attack on Titan features fascism, and not be like, Attack on Titan features fascism and actively questions fascism and warns you not to fall into that, and, you know, asks you to question the motives of even your most beloved characters. There's just so much more nuance there. Mm-hmm. That I think needed to be championed more than just, but what if it's fascist?
Yeah. Because it's like, okay, it has fascist subtext, but like you're saying it has fascist subtext. Are you saying it's like pro-fascist? Because when you get into saying like it's pro-fascist, that's a different conversation. Depicting fascism mm-hmm. is different than romanticizing it or propagandizing for fascism.
Yeah. And if anything, I think we need more stories featuring fascism. Because unfortunately, people aren't able to recognize it as readily as maybe we should. Yep. So I think maybe having some allegories, like remembering on Attack on Titan when the government, you know, concealed everything about the history and was like, no, we're just focusing on this one common enemy.
Right.
Maybe we should question why, you know, really basic example, like why was the US like, we need to focus on our common enemy of the drugs, the war on drugs.
Yeah, or if you don't buy the Chevrolet, the terrorists win.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is like, we need to consistently have media that depicts this sort of thing, because it's a nuanced and complicated issue. And we need things that depict it as a complicated and nuanced issue. Because the thing is, stuff like fascism doesn't arise overnight. It's not like a clear-cut hard stop in a lot of cases. Like, this just happens, and we know it's bad, and it's clear-cut. No, there's little, like, droppings of it here and there, and it happens over time. It's slow, you know?
Yeah.
And to the point where
Builds up like a kidney
what's that?
Stone.
What?
It builds up like a kidney stone.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're going you're going slow up the mountain, and as you're going slow up the mountain, it's hard to see the whole mountain. You know.
Yeah. I think I'm on the side of you two here, in that, like, yes, if it were supremely pro-fascist, I would definitely have problems with the story itself. But even if it were very, very pro-fascist, it's a story I'd still want to engage with, because you know, I'm a human with thoughts and emotions. I can look at something, analyze it, and think, do I agree or disagree with that rhetoric, right? And I think I want to read the last graph in this op-ed, because I feel like it's probably the one thing I agree with the most in Spielman's op-ed, is just not in the way he's using it. Quote, "Now, no one can clearly say what Isayama's true intentions are except for him, but it's hard to ignore the underpinnings of dystopian fiction when it stares you in the face. It looms over you like the colossal titan, serving as a reminder that even in fiction, we have a responsibility as consumers to fully engage with what a story might be trying to say, and to consider whether that's a message we want to hear." If you fully engage with the message, it's not yay fascism. It's not yay Jaegerists.
Yeah.
It's very much, this is terrifying. This is awful.
Yeah.
I mean, and we want to engage with it because, like, it's interesting from a story perspective, you know, in the same way, like, we watch Game of Thrones, not because we want dragons to rain fire on us, but because it's interesting to watch people go
Speak
through that
for
problem.
Yourself?
Just me. Okay. But
I watched the Game of Thrones, like, yeah, I want to fuck a dragon. So
step on me, Drogon.
Same. I mean, yeah. But with Attack on Titan, it's the same thing. Like, I don't want to live in a world where giants can eat people and then other people create the giants to subjugate some people. Like, I don't want to live in that world. It's just an interesting story that then happens to have this allegorical layer where it's mm-hmm. also just as interesting to analyze what the show is trying to say, right? Yeah. And just because it has fascism, it isn't the show saying, yes, fascism.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, to Spielman's point, and I mean, in this paragraph, he says we have a responsibility as consumers to fully engage with what the story might be trying to say. I mean, what we're doing right now is we're engaging with that story. Now, do we have a responsibility? I don't know. That's debatable. Like, saying someone has a responsibility to, like, engage with any piece of media, that's kind of broad. But I see what he's getting at.
I mean, I think we have the responsibility when it's something so heavy and serious, right?
Yeah.
Like Dragon Ball, I don't feel a responsibility to engage in whether or not Frieza and his fascism is okay. I mean, it's not, but I don't feel the need to watch it and be like, Frieza is a Nazi, right? Yeah. Like, you know, you just watch it for the big muscle punch. With Attack on Titan, though, there's so much, like, there are so many allusions to real world happenings or history where it's like you can't help but notice it. And once it's that on the nose, I feel like it behooves you to kind of keep chasing down that rabbit hole and see, what do I think about it?
Yeah.
Is this challenging mm-hmm. my worldview? How is this challenging my worldview?
Yeah. What are you trying to say, Isayama? And then how would I respond to that? Do I buy into that? Do I believe that? Do I endorse that?
Yeah. I just don't know if he's trying to say that, like, every person who consumes this piece of media needs to like feel a responsibility, because yeah. I just think that's a little arrogant, I guess.
Hoity-toity, high-minded.
Yeah.
I just want to watch Titans run around and
punch
little people. Yeah. Attack them.
Yeah.
Attack the Titans. That's what I'm in here for.
I mean, I think... I mean, a lot of people, in fact, I would maybe even say most people are going to, like, watch this and walk away with it, like, hey, like, I think there's a bigger conversation to be had here, maybe. But it doesn't necessarily mean they'll engage in that conversation. And I think they're also, on the flip side, are going to be people that are like, God damn it, I wanted to root for Aaron this whole show, and I'm going to keep rooting for Aaron for whatever reason, you know, because they're just that people mm-hmm. that... There are those types of people that, like, that's how they want to interpret this. I don't want to say that's, like, the wrong way to interpret that, like, because it's still a fictional story, but, like, you're missing a lot of the point here.
And that would be the populist way to interpret the story. I'm going to follow that person no matter what they do. That's populism.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's just, like, I don't know. Like, is there going to be people watching this that are like, yeah, no, I'm a Jaegerist. You know,
mm-hmm. yeah, and I think too the biggest underpinning point for me in this is that, I mean, obviously now, and we're a little guilty of what I'm about to say too, but when Spielman wrote this, the story wasn't done.
Yeah,
it wasn't
and,
over.
In fact, he's not even like, as far as we are now, right? So
right, but even when you get to that Jaegerist point, obviously we have enough problems with it. We're like, okay, clearly this was the wrong, or at least maybe not wrong, this was an incomplete interpretation. This was a interpretation based on, you've already gotten your conclusion, now you're working backwards to find the points that support your conclusion, perhaps.
Yes.
It's one of those. Daly's the only one here who knows the secrets of how it ends. But
y'all.
Don't say it.
I'm not going to say it, but I'm very interested. I would love for Tom to write another op-ed after the end of Attack on Titan.
Yeah. But I mean, this would be like watching, I guess I'm going to keep going to Harry Potter for some reason. It'd be like watching the Harry Potter movies and like getting to the movie where Voldemort takes over the school and then mm-hmm. writing an op-ed being like, J.K. Rowling is pro-fascist. I don't know if she is. I disagree with many of her other views. I can't comment on her thoughts on fascism, but you know, it'd be similar to that where it's like the story is incomplete.
Yeah. And let's stop midway through the last book and be like, here's my conclusion.
Yeah, and to be fair, I think Daly said we're asking the right questions. So,
yeah,
we are.
Okay.
Yeah,
is Aaron doing good?
probably not.
Shrug.
I don't know. I mean, it just goes back to the big point I have, which is just like, this is like Attack on Titan is something that should be enjoyed, right? I think there's a lot of critical thinking you can do, especially in like, obviously what we've been doing for the past hour is like critically thinking about the story, but underneath all that is just a really well-told story. Like, yes. Think about how Sasha saved a little girl, and then that little girl goes on to save Gabby, who killed Sasha because of her ignorant worldviews, but is learning to change her views because of the girl that Sasha saved. Like, that is incredible storytelling told across, like, over, you know, tens of chapters, tens of episodes, right? It's like, there is a master craft going on here, and I think it's just really weird to bog it down with like, it is fascist, therefore I don't like it, bye-bye. Wash my hands of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of ignoring of nuance with that, and one of those things is that the characters, like, they change throughout the series, and they're wrong throughout the series, and we're meant to be critical of them in a lot of ways. And it just surprises me, I guess, that in this op-ed, that's the conclusion that Spielman came to, despite so much evidence suggesting otherwise, that people change and not always for the better.
Mm. Yeah, I think you guys have pretty much nailed it. Like, I mean, yeah, I think either way, though, this anime is going to go down as like one of the more like the biggest, like, most important ones when it comes to the medium of anime. Like, I think this is going to be up there in, like, kind of the Hall of Fame with Full Metal Alchemist and, like, because I obviously this isn't a shonen, so I don't really want to necessarily say, like, you know, your One Piece, Naruto, Dragon Ball Z, Bleach, but
yeah, it's definitely, I would say it's today's Full Metal Alchemist. I would say it's
which also had a Jewish allegory race,
and wasn't it like Iraqi allegory as well with the Ishvalans?
Oh, that's true.
Like the Iraq Civil War, yeah, and that also had political commentary, right? But like, you know, there was still so much good story there, right? That to engage with the political commentary and come out with it just to say like, oh, it's fascist or something, right?
It's
like,
it's reductive.
Yes, reductive. Good word.
Yeah, if anything, Full Metal is like anti-God.
Maybe. I still need to finish Brotherhood, full disclosure. Yeah. I finished the original series.
Anti-necromancy, I'll say.
Yeah. But yeah, I do really think Attack on Titan is going to be like the next Full Metal Brotherhood in terms of just like its clout and its... Because it's got that appeal where, like, I think it would appeal beyond anime fans. I mean, that's what the whole thing was back in 2013, right? Is that, oh, this ain't your daddy's anime. This ain't your Goku and Frieza's. This isn't Bleach. This is adult. This is serious shit. There's gore, right?
So I remember, y'all know Erased.
Yeah.
And I was like, a lot of the reviews for that, including a review that a friend of mine wrote in our... undergrad publication, was that it's not just a good anime, it's a good show.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to engage with, even if you're not familiar with like the anime format. Same thing with Attack on Titan. Like, it's not got like the like fan service moments that might turn off some people that aren't familiar with the medium. It's doing its own thing, and it's doing it well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I actually recently finished Erased not that long ago too, and it was like it was the first anime at the time when I had first seen it where I was like, oh, they're tackling really heavy subject matter like domestic violence, you know, murder, like was there child molestation too? I can't remember if they covered that or something.
I don't remember if it was that, but it was definitely like child kidnap murder.
There's a suggestion.
Yeah, I was like kind of disappointed by the ending of that show, but that's besides the point.
Mm-hmm. Fight me, Colin.
Got him.
We're gonna fight after the episode.
All right, now we're gonna take a break, and we'll be back with our Erased spoilers.
Yeah, we've already been like going almost an hour and a half. Holy shit! I didn't realize we've been talking about Attack on Titan that long.
Yeah, I mean, hey, we could go longer.
That's true.
Colossal review. Let's go.
Yeah, but no, I think it'd be awesome though to do a follow up once we do get the ending of this. into this show.
Watch like a year from now, we were wrong. Attack on Titan is very fascist. It's super duper fascist.
It's super. Yeah.
Daly's not saying anything.
I'm not saying
the
anything.
Was fucking terrible. I know. Never mind, things. Guys. We take everything we said back.
It definitely is going to be a polarizing end. Mm-hmm. But does that surprise anyone?
No. I see it being nothing short of that. Like, I don't see how you end this thing where you make everyone happy. That's just not the type of the show that this is anymore at all. So, yeah.
Well, I think we should probably wrap it here. TLDR, engage with your stories, and depiction is not endorsement. I think that's a good wrap up.
Phrase of the day.
I think that pretty much nails it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you have thoughts about Attack on Titan, whether it's just like, wasn't it really sick when Levi did this? Because everything Levi does is pretty, I mean, he gets like 80% of the animation budget, you know?
I like the way he cleans things.
Mm-hmm.
As a habitual tidier, I admire that.
Same. So yeah, if you have thoughts about Attack on Titan, whether it's about its, you know, political discussions or just about how cool it is, you can email those things to everythinginpod@gmail.com, or you can at us at everythinginpod on Twitter. Next week, we're going to be talking about, what are we talking about next week?
We're talking about marketing campaigns?
Yes, we're going to talk about the tall lady. Step on me, lady. Yeah. Lady.
Step on me.
Lady Dimitrice.
Yes. Dimitrice. We're going to talk about what was the buzzwords they used in our degree program, Daily. A new power, marketing, and how people can take marketing campaigns and run with them, and why brands should back that and be okay with that.
Should have tall ladies. Yes.
Every brand should have a tall 9.5-foot lady.
Yes. So we're going to talk a lot about Lady Dimitrice, I guess, presence. Is how you say that.
Resident Evil.
Yeah,
8,
Resident Evil. I guess that was.
You're not in the gaming.
And that's going to be out by next weekend too. So I don't know. I mean, play that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're going to talk about that. Just talk about the weird internet fervor and horniness around really tall lady. It'll be a little bit more highbrow. I promise.
Oh, never mind. I'm take me off this episode. Okay. I only have horny thoughts.
Okay, good. So yeah, you can tune in next week for that, and we'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.